Hello and welcome to the Emma Stones. This is the podcast where we're going for Emma Stone's entire filmography and ranking reviewing as we go. I'm Cameron, and as always, I'm joined by Awais, who's Emma Stone's number one fan. Awais, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm excited to talk about these movies. We're doing another late one. Seems to be the recurring thing, but just good vibes.
Just the schedules. The schedules are not aligning. Just
busy people.
During the day.
I know.
You've got that job. I've got
you've
a job.
Got that job.
It's all sort of just it's getting in the way, but we have to make time for our girl Emma, and we are finally. And these are a good batch of films. Today we're
this
looking
is
at
what we've been talking about getting into the. Yeah. This is the shift into this Emma is, Stone.
Yeah, this is what you recognize her for. We're talking about Battle of the Sexes and The Favourite, which is two of our probably bigger ones outside of La La Land. We're kind of leaving La La Land. If you don't know already, we're leaving La La Land for a kind of special episode coming up towards the end of the run, which we should be recording fairly soonish right now. We've
maybe
been talking
soon,
about that for
maybe,
a while, but
maybe getting things into motion this week.
Maybe. Hopefully.
Who knows?
Hopefully. After the fucking podcast. might as well just jump right into the first films if you're ready for that. So we're talking about Battle of the Sexes, which was directed by Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris. It stars the likes of Steve Carell, Sarah Silverman, Andrea Riseborough, Bill Pullman, Alan Cumming, lots of a big cast here, and of course, Emma Stone. Awais, what happens in this film?
Yeah, so sort of based on true events and based on a 1973 tennis match between, at the time, women's world champion Billie Jean King and ex-men's champ Bobby Riggs. The Battle of the Sexes, it sort of follows the build-up to this sort of what ended up being a very historic match for not only the sport, but just sort of, for sort of gender equality and sort of women's rights at the time. Because it sort of all kicks off when the female tennis players are offered very little money compared to the sort of men, and they sort of leave to go and form their own tournament, and then this catches the attention of Bobby Riggs, who decides to sort of exploit that and sets up this sort of big famous match. Now, are you a fan of tennis films? Are you a fan of tennis?
I'm a fan of tennis films. Tennis in general, a bit of a part-time supporter. A big Wimbledon match is happening. I watched that Emma Raducanu match. I think like everybody under the sun did when that happened. But apart from that, not massive on the tennis front. Like I said, I watched the odd game, but tennis films,
They're really good, aren't they?
Tennis films are always excellent, and I don't know what it is. I mean, you, a bit of a tangent, but you saw King Richard on Monday? Did you see King Richard?
I did, and yes. I'm talking literally because I saw your sort of letterbox review for it, talking about tennis films. And obviously, funnily enough, that's an upcoming sort of tennis film about the Willie, Venus and Serena. But this one is, which is just sort of funny because we're sort of talking about this at the same time. I am a tennis fan. I do quite enjoy a bit of tennis, but tennis movies, there's just something about them. It's so cinematic,
It's such a great sport for tension. It's an easy sport to kind of follow. You can get a really intense sequence out of a tennis match in a film easily. It's got this natural energy to it, I think, the sport in itself, that makes for some great cinema and some great moments. And this is one of those films, especially in the kind of last scene where you kind of have the big old tennis match. All these tennis films sort of culminate in the big tennis match. I mean, you get a lot of little bits and pieces throughout the films, and then this big tennis match at the end is very intense, especially not knowing the outcome. I mean, you can kind of know the outcome because it obviously would have to end in a happy ending, because films end in happy endings usually. It's one of those ones where it's like it just has this tension to it. You just feel like you don't know what the outcome is going to be. It could go any way, and it's great like that, especially if you don't know the story. Like I did, I didn't know the story personally, so
yeah,
it was great like that.
You know, neither did I, and I thought it was such a fascinating story to learn about. And I'd heard the name sort of Billie Jean King before, but I didn't really know anything about her. And so sort of seeing this story, because there's a lot of moving parts to this movie. Like we sort of talk about it culminating in the sort of big match. That's really only a small part of it.
Yeah.
Like the actual sort of whole Bobby Riggs, Billie Jean King thing doesn't actually rear its head until about over halfway into the film. Like it's not the focus of the film for a really long time. And there's a lot of other things going on. And I found that really interesting. Just the sort of life of this athlete and just everything she was sort of fighting for and dealing with at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, because she's sort of discovering her sexuality as well and things like that at a time when there was a lot of controversy around that. And it's just, it was just such a fascinating story, I think.
Yeah, no, it's great that kind of unraveling of Billie Jean King as a person as well, and just kind of learning about her and what she was dealing with. And you know, and I think Emma Stone, I would possibly argue, and this might be kind of controversial, maybe one of her best performances, I think.
Yeah, easily. I would agree with that.
Maybe, and I know she's amazing in La La Land, but maybe technically a bit more layered and interesting as a character.
I think it's more challenging. Character.
And I think if it wasn't for La La Land, I think this would have probably been her other shot of she didn't get nominated, but I think this should have been a shot at an Oscar for her. I think it is a really incredible performance from Emma Stone in this film.
Yeah.
Like, great stuff. And yeah, Billie Jean King is just such a fascinating person. She pops her head up sometimes in the Wimbledon broadcasts and stuff. I mean, that might be where you maybe heard the name before or whatever.
Yeah, I think so.
She commentates and presents the odd tennis match. I think I've seen her since the film came out presenting stuff on the BBC. But it's like I said, it's a really interesting kind of look at that outside of the tennis stuff, which I think really makes the film. You don't get a lot of stuff like that.
It adds to the sort of emotional investment of the Billie Jean King, Bobby Riggs sort of, you know, rivalry. And also, you know, we touched on Amazon. I do agree with you. I think it is arguably a more challenging role than some of the other ones we've seen her do. And I think she completely, you know, you sort of forget you're watching Emma Stone at times. And what I really loved about this movie was you kind of almost do forget you're watching a movie. Like it just feels so real and sort of so accurate to sort of the time. But also Steve Carell is fantastic, because this was sort of at the time he was also reinventing himself. And when he was sort of taking on these sort of more dramatic roles, I don't think he gets enough credit for this film, because I think his character is kind of put on the back burner, which is a shame, because what I really like about the film is in the sort of last 40 minutes or so, we really get a look into his character. And it's quite a tragic character. And it sort of evens out the sort of dynamic in that final match. And in terms of like emotional investment, and I really like that. I do wish the film spent a little bit more time building on his arc as well, to sort of make it more emotionally investing in terms of like, you know, these are both players that have something sort of to lose and stuff. But, you know, I completely understand why the focus is sort of Billie Jean King. Steve Carell is also fantastic. And I think just the performances across the board in this film are terrific.
Yeah, no, totally. I think Andrea Riseborough of her standout in this as well. She plays a sort of the love interest to Billie Jean King. She's the hairdresser at the beginning, and they kind of form a bond that leads into a lot more than just a bond, I guess, you know what I mean? And helps Billie discover kind of her sexuality and who she really is. And it plays a big part. And I think it's a great supporting cast. Of course, Alan Cumming, as a stylist, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Who sort of helps and provides some advice along the way as well. And there's just lots of lots of great supporting roles in this film, and I think it's a hidden gem. I think not a lot of people talk about this. Not a lot of people talk about this film, and I really wish more people had seen it when it did come out, because I remember seeing it. It was like the American Express Gala at London Film Festival. Like in 2017, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
And I managed to get like tickets to the uplink, like satellite preview at Edinburgh and that. And I remember coming out of it being blown away, like this, like thinking like this will do great at the Oscar season, and nothing happened. Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It literally was gone in a matter of like weeks. No one was speaking about it. And I think it's such a shame, because it is such a good film, and I would recommend. I think it's like £3 to rent on Prime. I don't know why it's not in Disney Plus yet, but it's like £3 to rent on Prime, and just watch it. It's really, really good, underrated. I love it.
Very interesting sort of piece of trivia I saw on this, and I'm curious to sort of know your thoughts on it. There was a point where Brie Larson was supposed to play Billie Jean King. So Emma Stone was cast first as Billie Jean King, but then scheduling issues sort of forced her to drop out. And then Brie Larson was cast and sort of, you know, everything was official and she was going to replace her. And then after a few months, Brie Larson also dropped out, at which point Stone's schedule cleared and she was able to come back. But yeah, I weirdly, maybe it's just because Emma's so good in the sort of role, I can't see a sort of Brie Larson version of it.
I can see it. I don't know if it's in my head. I don't know if it's better or worse.
Yeah.
I don't think it would have the same. There's this like, I want to say a texture. It's a weird word, I guess, to use for a performance, but there's this kind of texture to Emma Stone's performance that just, I don't think you would get from another actress at all. Like, it just would not work with Brie Larson. And I'm a massive Brie Larson fan. I think she's a brilliant actress. Room is one of my favorite films ever. I don't know if she would be right for this role in particular. I think this Emma Stone did this so well that I could not.
I also think the likeness between sort of Emma and Billy, maybe that's why I can't see it as much, because I don't, at least right now, I can't see Brie Larson having that same sort of likeness. But
no,
you know, Emma Stone does sort of have that resemblance to sort of Billie Jean King aesthetically, I think, as well.
Yeah, definitely. She is perfect. You know, it's the perfect role for her, and that's one of the reasons it works so well. If Emma wasn't as good as she is in this, the film wouldn't work at all. It wouldn't work. You can have all the supporting cast going and doing all that, but if your lead's not right, then it's not going to work. And thankfully, Emma was the right choice.
Yeah, someone needs to get her to a chiropractor for carrying this film on her back.
Exactly. Another small aspect I forgot to mention when I was kind of rambling on about the film. I love the aesthetic, like the actual cinematography and the production design is incredible. Making this feel like a film from the 70s. Like, it just feels like a film from the 70s. They've done so well in sort of nailing the time period and nailing it down in terms of just looking and feeling like a film from that era. And like, it's perfect in that regard. Like, it just looks great. It's a good looking film as well. Any other cool facts you've got lying around in there?
Not really. I mean, it's you know, just sort of one just very interesting one. The age gap between Billie Jean and Bobby Riggs is the same age gap between Emma Stone and Steve Carell.
Wow.
There was only a year, so Billie Jean was 29 when she played Bobby Riggs, who was 55. Emma Stone was 28 and Steve Carell was 54. So, you know, pretty close in age as well. I just think that's quite interesting, because you normally don't get that sort of accuracy with these kind of films. Yeah.
It was definitely fate.
Exactly, sure.
You're quite happy to move on to rating. What are you thinking in terms of a rating?
I would go 4. I would go 4 out of 5. I think it's a terrific film. It sort of hits those themes on the head. it really gets you invested. It's more than just a sports film, you know. And I think a lot of these kind of, you know, genre films, like, you know, sports films and stuff, they're often sort of overlooked. But this, I feel like, has a lot more to it. And I really do sort of just love so much about it. I think it's got a lot of moving parts. There's a lot that sort of the film does kind of skim over, understandably, because, you know, you're putting an entire sort of person's career into a movie. And I think sometimes it's maybe got too many moving parts to it. That's maybe my only issue with it. But I think it's just absolutely fantastic.
Ooh.
What about you?
Ooh. Ooh. Oh, am I going to do it? Am I going to do it? Because I love this film, man. I love it. I love it.
You can't tease it and not do it. You know, you gotta commit.
Five. Fuck it. Go on. Yeah. I'll do it. 5 stars for me. You know, I think on my, like, Letterbox, it's 4.5. And I think that's kind of fair to set it at, I think. But for the purposes of this show, I'll go 5 and give the first. I think it's their first 5 of the... Is it? Must be.
I think it's your first 5, yeah.
It's my first 5, at least. But yeah, I'm a big fan of Battle of the Sexes, and I really, really suggest you go and watch it if you can easily get to it, because it is great. I'm surprised it's not on Disney Plus. I think it's a Searchlight film anyway, so yeah. Maybe at some point it'll be on Disney Plus.
Hopefully eventually.
But for now, have a look at it, maybe rent it, frequent. It's worth your money, I'd say.
I would say so as well. Yeah.
Really worth a look at. But yeah, that's Battle of the Sexes. Let's get moving on to the next film, shall we? Next up, we're talking about The Favourite, which was directed by Yorgos Lanthimos. Released in 2018, it stars the likes of Rachel Weisz, Olivia Colman, Nicholas Holt, and of course, Emma Stone.
Yeah.
Gosh, what happens in this film?
A lot. And it's sort of very, very loosely sort of based on you know, sort of real events. And this it sort of takes place in the early 18th century when England is at war with France. And Queen Anne, who's played by Olivia Colman, she occupies the throne. But she's not really doing much. It's sort of her sort of close friend Lady Sarah, who's played by Rachel Weisz, and her sort of confidant, who really essentially governs the country in her sort of absence. And then a new servant, Abigail, played by Emma Stone, who is Lady Sarah's cousin. She basically arrives on the scene and starts to slowly win over Queen Anne's affection, and it very quickly becomes this sort of, you know, like this sort of competition between Lady Sarah and Abigail to sort of win Queen Anne's attention. And you know, Queen Anne herself is quite an attention seeker, and it's, yeah, it just becomes this very sort of chaotic, just, I don't want to say, mess is not the right word. It's not a mess. It becomes utter chaos, really, in the sort of last act of this film.
It's a wild, wild film, that's for sure. It's one of those ones that you kind of have to see to believe. Like, the people talking about it don't really do it justice. It is wilder than you can possibly imagine.
And exactly.
Still really works as well. Like, it's a great film. It's, yeah, The Favourites. I wouldn't say it's a favorite of mine, but it's really good. What do you think, though? Is it best Yorgos Lanthimos? Or
I was just about to ask you that, actually. What are your thoughts on Yorgos Lanthimos? Just before we start talking, but what are your thoughts in general on, like, Yorgos Lanthimos' style?
I like him. I like that style. It works for me. I think it's a really interesting style of film that he kind of makes. It's sort of really. Would deadpan kind of, not a comedy, but sort of like that kind of, is it maybe deadpan kind of comedy element?
I would say
of,
so.
Mm-hmm. Take this dead serious all the time, but so people in silly situations, or a bit of mystery and a bit of darkness under the surface. It is, yeah, stuff like Killing of a Sacred Deer really sticks out to me. It's probably my favorite.
That's probably mine too as well.
Love the Lobster.
Your sort of question.
Yeah, he's such a good. One of those ones where you just kind of keep watching and see what they'll do next, and just see how they adapt and change in every film.
Yeah,
and yeah. The favorite's a really good example of him. But I would say The Killing of the Sacred Deer is probably my favorite of his. But what about you?
I would agree. I really like his style. It's weird because I really enjoyed The Lobster and I loved Killing of a Sacred Deer, and I loved The Favourite the first time I saw it. But I never thought I would ever watch them again, you know? And like not in a bad way. I just, they're so sort of esoteric and sort of so much that you kind of almost don't need to revisit it. So this was my first time actually rewatching it. And I was concerned because I was like, is part of his shtick that, you know, maybe it's like a one trick wonder, but I found this to be just as enjoyable, if not more so, on a sort of second watch. His style is so weird, and almost to the extent that you kind of wonder how he's, you know, how these films get made, and how The Favourite especially, because that was like a huge, you know, this was his most commercial film, and it was a huge awards success as well, and it's just kind of baffling to me because it's so strange in the best way, to the point where you sort of described it at the beginning, you know, you don't know what to expect, and I don't think anything can really, if you've not seen it, nothing can really prepare you
or do it justice. The trailer at the time kind of sold it as a kind of old-fashioned drama, like old kind of period drama,
It's a very normal film,
and I remember sitting in a screen full of old people, thinking, "You guys are no clue what you're in for, like at all." Cineworld of all places as well. It wasn't even like Film House I saw it in. It was bloody Cineworld I saw it in.
Yeah, that's
which
where
was
I saw
crazier
it.
To me. Yeah.
Yeah,
and I don't remember the reactions now because it was so long ago. But it was one where you were like, I don't know if you're really gonna enjoy. Is this really something you're here for? You know?
Yeah, I went with two of my friends, who you know aren't massive sort of film people, and I don't think had sort of seen a Yorgos Lanthimos film. I was somewhat prepared, having sort of seen his other stuff. You know, I somewhat knew what to expect, but I remember one of them loved it, the other hated it. And I think that's Yorgos Lanthimos in a nutshell. I would say this is maybe his most accessible film.
Yeah.
Not to say that it's accessible. I still think there are many people that are going to be very cold to it. But I'm not sure what it is about it. I think some of the themes, the performances, the cast, I think it all just, it feels a lot warmer than, say, Killing of a Sacred Deer, and then The Lobster, which is just one of the weirdest films I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, I don't think anything will get weirder than The Lobster, and sort of
more.
That would probably be his most kind of repellent one to a general audience. I feel.
I think so. Yeah,
you're not gonna get on board with that if you're not like into that kind of thing. I think Killing of a Sacred Deer can work for an audience because it has this kind of like mystery thriller element to it that I think people can kind of latch onto and look past the sort of like weirdness if they wanted to, which The Favourite doesn't kind of have, but I guess the Oscar buzz around it sort of made up for that in a way as well. You know, people kind of wanting to watch it to see what it was all about, and maybe they enjoyed it, maybe they don't. That's kind of the toying cost for them.
Yeah. And of course the performances, I mean, we can't talk about The Favourite and not, you know, because this won Olivia Colman her sort of Oscar.
Did she deserve it though? That's the, can I just pose that question to you now? Did she deserve that Oscar for The Favourite? I mean, she was up against Glenn Close for The Wife, or what was it called? Was it The Wife?
And Lady Gaga for A Star Is Born.
Yeah.
I think she's good. I don't think she's not my favorite in this cast. I do believe that Rachel Weisz and Emma Stone both turn in more memorable performances.
Yeah.
Because they have more sizable roles. But I do think Olivia Colman is good. I personally that year think it's... Who else was nominated that year?
That's a good question. I know... Yeah, it was Gaga. I know that Glenn Close was definitely nominated for The Wife, wasn't... That was a definite, wasn't yeah. it, that year? Because that was like... That was hers to lose.
That was, yeah.
Because she was the front runner. And then Colman kind of swept up.
Okay, so it was Melissa McCarthy for Can You Ever Forgive Me, Lady Gaga for A Star Is Born, Glenn Close for The Wife, and Yalitza Aparicio for Roma, and then Olivia Colman, of course, who ended up winning that year. So it was a very tough year, in fairness.
Yeah, maybe would have gone Gaga that year then, I think.
Yeah,
I feel like her performances may be both overrated and underrated at the same time. I don't know how that kind of works for him. I don't think Colman really turned in a performance I really remember. Mm-hmm. Even after a rewatch, you're sort of like, she was good, yeah. You know.
I think she is good. You know, she does fit that sort of world and that tone well. I would just say, out of the sort of the trio, I definitely think it's the weakest performance. Which is not to say it's a bad performance. I just think that is how good Rachel Weisz and Emma Stone are. Mm-hmm. Emma Stone is so much fun to watch in this movie. She's having a great time, isn't she? This is such a crazy, chaotic performance. And I just love the energy. I love the sort of completely unhinged nature of her character in this.
Yeah, no, she is... She knows what she wants, and she will get what she wants. And it's funny to just watch that character go after it, you know, and just do whatever they have to do. And yeah, if that means sleeping with the queen,
go for it.
I always loved the wet sponge story that Olivia Colman tells on the Graham Norton show, for a scene that involved fingering, Olivia Colman got a sponge with a hole in it to make it sort of more acting Emma could do. More acting Emma could do, and put a sponge and it was like I don't think she told her either, so it was a surprise.
That's quite
so
funny.
She tells it very funny, in a funny way, as Olivia Colman always does, but that was a weird that set must have been a very strange set, I feel. Just
but I was gonna say, yeah, I feel like that story probably sums up the entire film in a nutshell, really, doesn't it? And the entire sort of really, is there a better sort of anecdote than that? I think it's just the most strange and surreal movie. I want to give a mention to Nicholas Hoult in this, who is just... no one talks about him because everyone talks about, you know, the three leading ladies, and again understandably, he is so funny in this. Some of the language it's just so good, isn't it?
It's just insane. I will not lie. It's a very, very funny film, and a very, very... just Nicholas Hoult does so well in that role, and he is just crazy. It's just brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to use any sort of profanity on the podcast, but I can't even remember some of the words that Nicholas Hoult says, but like they make up sort of like swear words, which are just so good. The dancing scene is amazing. Just the whole sort of the disconnect that these characters have for the men in the film is so funny to me. I think there's like a scene where, you know, they're taught, like, the, you know, the guy's just obsessed with Emma Stone's character, and she's just not giving him any sort of attention, and he's just living for that. And just that, I just, it's just such fun dynamics, such very interesting dynamics, and I think it just makes for one of the weirdest, most entertaining films that I've seen in just a while, I think.
Yeah. And on that, what would you rate it?
I would give it a 4 out of 5. I think it's very just, yeah, it's so much fun. It's so much fun. It's, and you know, there's so much in it. I think there's so much to get out of every viewing because of sort of how weird it all is, I think. And like, there's an actual plot and, you know, characters and stuff to it. I think with all sort of Yorgos Lanthimos films, it can get a little bit too much for my liking. And you know, that's just down to my own sort of preference. And that's my issue with sort of every one of his films. But I think this is just so enjoyable. And I know he's working with Emma next. I know his next project's going to be, it's going to reunite him and Emma. And I'm so excited to see what it entails, because this was just such a fun pairing. And I think the two of them work so well together. I think she's great with that dialogue and that sort of, you know, direction. And I can't wait to see what they do.
Untitled Greek National Opera Project, I think is what it's called currently.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got I think you've got Willem Dafoe as well.
It doesn't say who else is in it. It says Damien Bonnard is in it, but I've not got anything else. Oh, no, it's a short. So maybe it's...
It's called Poor Things.
There it is, Poor Things, yes.
It's got Mark Ruffalo, Willem Dafoe. It's got Rami Youssef.
Oh, yes.
Who I'm a big fan of. Christopher Abbott.
I'm seeing that now.
A great cast. Emma Stone. It's like a Victorian sort of... a Victorian fantasy, and it's kind of like Frankenstein. It's kind of like Frankenstein, from what I heard, except it's a woman called Belle Baxter, who's played by Emma Stone, who's brought back to life by sort of an eccentric scientist played, I think, by Willem Dafoe, and I think that could be such a fun dynamic.
I'd like to watch this movie right now.
Yeah, 2022, apparently.
I will watch it. I can't wait to see it. I will give it a 4 as well, just to kind of wrap things up there. I really enjoy it. And mainly got the same kind of qualms as you. It does lean too far into Yorgos Lanthimos, you know, in that kind of style. Next week, we're looking at... Maniac and Zombieland 2. I need to get watching Maniac tonight then.
Well, I guess we know what we're doing after this.
Yeah, I know. I'll literally going upstairs like, I'm going to watch all of Maniac tonight then. But yeah, no, that should be too hard. I've seen the first couple episodes of Maniac before. It's going to be, for you, maybe a light rewatch. For me, a kind of half rewatch, half first time watch, because I did drop off midway through my first viewing of it. And
I'm really very excited.
You think it's really good. So I'm excited to get a look at that.
I'm pretty sure I watched it within like 2 days when it first came out. And I'm very excited to rewatch it, actually. It's very strange, very cool.
I have a lot of free time coming up. So I'll try and get it watched in that time as well. And Zombieland 2, decent. I'm excited. No, maybe not. It's the first movie.
We
can talk about that.
See,
we can talk about that later. Yeah.
It exists.
Yeah, it exists. It's a film that exists currently. And that's all we can really say about it. But yeah, looking forward to all that. Let us know. You can subscribe to us on YouTube. Follow us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. We're audio services. All around the globe, I guess. YouTube is probably the best place you can find us in lovely video format. Leave a like while you're there, or maybe review the podcast. I don't know if that's a thing. I don't know. I don't listen to podcasts. I'm Cameron. You can find me on Twitter at CamsOG, ohifilms.com, and the ohifilms YouTube channel, where we do sort of reviews of the stuff coming out. I'm doing a solo review at some point. I need to get writing that, because Jordy never saw Ghostbusters. So I'm going to be reviewing Ghostbusters on my lonesome.
I'm excited.
At some point in the coming week, so get looking for that in your YouTube inbox at some point. Yeah, Oasis, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at OasisOasis or on thefilmbite.com. I'm actually going to watch the first Ghostbusters for the first time. I've never seen any Ghostbusters bar the 2016 one, but I need to see it for people's Sexiest Man Alive. So I will be watching Ghostbusters 1 and 2 for the first time and reviewing them.
Oh my God.
I knew that was going to just cause so bad.
Oh my God.
Ruffle some feathers.
But yeah, thank you very much for watching or listening. You can find us next week doing Maniac and Zombieland 2, so stick around for that. But yeah, thank you so much for watching. We'll see you in the next one. Bye.